Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our series of That One Play, picking one play from Baltimore history, talking about it in terms of historical context and whatever else folks want to talk about. That one play for today, one of the iconic plays in Ravens history, Ray Rice's 4th-and-29 conversion against the Chargers in 2012. I struggle. There's a fair number of younger fans who probably have never seen this play, you know, who became fans of the Ravens in the last 5 to 6 years. They're Lamar Jackson era fans, perhaps, that just don't know about this play and maybe even who Ray Rice was. But joining me to talk about that is John Mason. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Ken, so much for having me. This is exciting moment for me. I've been listening to the show for a long time. I love the way that you dissect things just like this, getting into a play real deep. Raised in Baltimore, but moved out to Phoenix in 2001, and always looking ways to talk Ravens football. And so this is exciting because there's not as many Ravens fans out here as they are back home.
I can imagine. You are at Mace Dog 20. That's M-A-C-E Dog D-A-W-G 20. on Twitter. So best place to talk to you.
Yeah, that's a good place to talk football. I'm also on the Ravens thread on Reddit, which is where I originally had heard about this show.
Oh, fantastic. We're glad to hear that. So John, we'll talk a little bit about the Ray Rice catch. In a lot of ways, the Ravens stumbled through that 2012 season. They had a good record coming into that Chargers game. They only lost two ball games the whole year. They were 8-2 at the time. They'd just beaten the Steelers in a big game on November 18th, but they were November 25th. They went out to San Diego and were trailing for much of the game. In fact, they trailed 10-0, and then the Chargers had just extended their lead to 13-3 with 7 minutes or so to go in that game, 7:51 actually on a field goal. Ravens got the ball back and finally had their first offensive license for the game with a long drive that ended with a Pitta touchdown to close to 13-10. That probably not enough at that point. Well, definitely not enough. It was 13-10, right? So game can't end there and have the Ravens fans happy. But they got the ball back after a 3-and-out. Which they stopped Rivers on 3rd-and-7, and they got the ball back. At this point, they started a drive. Why don't you take it from here in terms of talking through like kind of what happened and leading up to that play?
Yeah, thanks. I think, like you mentioned, you know, the 8-2 record, the Chargers were 4-7. It doesn't, if you just look at that, you would think this wasn't a significant game, you know, but they had really were struggling at home, or excuse me, struggling away versus home. The stats were night and day with what Flacco was doing in terms of touchdowns, completions, yards per game. And if any newer fans of the Ravens that want to go back and watch this game, you probably don't want to start it until that time point that you mentioned. Because it was really a struggle to watch. It was no scoring until the fourth quarter, really, for the Ravens. But yeah, so they made a good third down, three and out stop after that touchdown to Pitta. They had a nice return from Jacoby Jones, got to about the 40. They were able to get one first down, but then there was a few series of events that looked like, oh man, they're gonna blow this chance. There was a throw to the sideline that was almost intercepted by Eric Weddle, but he had stepped out of bounds. Eric Weddle, mm-hmm. You know, on the Chargers at that point before he'd come to the Ravens. And then they had a holding penalty that was a dump off to Ray Rice that looked like it would have gained about 8 yards, got the holding penalty. So now they were first and 20, the incomplete pass. And then another drop back. There was an overthrow play by Flacco. And then the last play before that, or after that, was rather a fumble by Joe Flacco. And thankfully, it was picked up by, I think, Jared Gaither, one of the linemen. Or maybe it wasn't Jared Gaither. I'm sorry. Who was it? Maybe it was Michael Orr. But
yeah, it was Michael Orr. I'm sorry. I was muted there.
Yeah, you're right. It was Michael Orr. So thank you for that. So that put them at 4th and 29. So they were now down down by 3 points, looking with only, you know, a few minutes left in the game, and really looked like no chance to pull this out. And so they had to convert that. And they line up with three wideouts. They all go, you know, take off all the way to the line that they needed to get to, right? The first down line. And then, except for Ray Rice, he was about a few yards from the line of scrimmage. And it was one of those plays that was so classic to, you know, what the Ravens would do, that Flacco dump off to Ray Rice. And I know we're talking most about this play and then, but something I wish we would see more of with the regime today between Lamar and Dobbins, but topic for another time, maybe. But just a quick dump off, mm-hmm. and then just some magic happened, just something you couldn't even believe. But
so going back to your dump off thing for a while, the Flacco to Rice connection as the automatic check down on an awful lot of passing routes was remarkable. And yeah. Rice, in fact, and I don't know if it was true in 2012, but it was true in some of his years, had more yak than he had receiving yards, which means his average place of reception was behind the line of scrimmage. So it gives you an idea of how Ray Rice was really using this offense. Lamar Jackson, very different because Lamar is his own check down. So they don't have really a check down running back very often. If they want to get the ball out quickly to somebody, they can do that. And it's kind of an extension of the running game a lot of times the way they operate. But Lamar likes to run a lot of vertical routes, a lot of routes down the field, and then a lot of help routes or come back to me routes and things when he leaves the pocket. But he's really his own check down in terms of leaving the pocket, and he wants that area clear. So you don't have a check down receiver there with a linebacker that goes with it.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. And definitely good analysis for me, the untrained eye here. But yeah, I mean, when you look at that 4th and 29, I mean, I don't think I've seen a team convert a 4th and 29. Mm-hmm. From my recollection, besides this play. And so it was one, you couldn't really believe what you were seeing. And Ray Rice takes the ball, as we said, just a few yards from the line of scrimmage. He runs up to about, he was at about the 50 marker on the field, then runs laterally all the way to the other number markers on the field. And it looks like he's not going to quite make it. He's got three guys chasing him. Weddle's about to make the tackle. And then Bolden makes an incredible block, which almost knocks over Ray Rice in that effort. And he's able to then extend his arms just enough to get the ball over the line, which was just one of those moments. I mean, I was watching it live on television and I was just going crazy. Like, I can't believe what I just saw. And there's no way. It was really incredible and such a fun play. And it felt like, to me, this was just one of those things that really got us, you know, that emotional punch that the team needed, because there was sort of those up and down moments. I mean, this was week 12. And so you're already mm-hmm. kind of thinking, are we postseason? Are we not? Had a good record, mm-hmm. but it was up and down.
So I want to talk a little bit, because there's a lot to unpack there. So much on that play that I loved about it. So first of all, the block by Bolden was amazing. I mean, he was coming full speed. I think it was Weddle that he hit, actually, too.
Yeah.
I might be wrong about that. Might have been another safety. But he knocked him out of the complete picture. And it was, a lot of people thought it was a block in the back. If you're a Chargers fan, you definitely think it was a block in the back. But it looked to me like Bolden really did a lot to get his shoulder to exactly equal with the other guy's shoulder. And he nailed him. And, you know, they wanted the flag, of course, there. And then Rice, he still didn't have it made. And he extended and dove for the line to gain. And as often happens, the officials, when it's close, usually give it to the offensive team. And they did in this case. Real question about whether he was down at the 34.5, somewhere between the 33.5 and the 34.5. And I think he needed to get to about the 33.5 to make it. So anyway, finally, they spotted the ball as a made. They measured, it was good. And then they challenged, and the thing stood up under challenge, which to me, it was a nervous couple of minutes there waiting for that challenge ruling to come back.
It really was. Yeah. That was, really, I wasn't sure what they were going to do. I was so glad that they'd called it on the field a first down, because that's usually so crucial to getting it called that way. But they certainly looked at the tape for a while. The trainers, as you mentioned, were checking out Weddle to make sure he was all right. And on the mic, they said something about the runner was down, but we're going to measure when they came on the PA, which I thought was like, wait, so they're saying he didn't make it? And then they brought out the chains, and sure enough, there was plenty of room there. But definitely was as close as you could call it. And I love, as you pointed out, like, you know, Bolden did kind of nick Ray Rice, and he kind of stumbled a little bit, but he just had so much power. You know how he would run so low to the ground, which was so good about how shifty he was and ability to get forward motion and get those extra yards. Mm-hmm. It was just a staple of his. And I can't ever, I mean, Bolden was one of my favorite players that year. I mean, it's just his toughness to make that block. And there's so many other moments throughout that season, the postseason, that really he would charge that team up, because also historically, Ray Lewis was on the sideline with injury. So we didn't have his emotion on the field. And Ed Reed had been suspended up until that game for some issues with, what they were saying, targeting or hits to the helmet or something. I don't know all of that, but a lot of the, you know, they really needed guys like that to get this team fired up. And this just felt like one of those moments that said, okay, we can overcome huge issues and on the road. And that's going to be crucial to getting, you know, a long playoff run going. And obviously, it turned out.
From this point forward in the game, they did get another first down. And they went down about the 20-yard line before they kicked a game-tying field goal to send them into overtime with 3 seconds left. So they didn't actually get it done on this drive, which, you think, you convert 4th and 29, there's going to be a pretty good chance you get in the end zone after that, particularly with that amount of time left. Didn't happen.
Yeah. No, it didn't. They had to stop. They had to kick a field goal. They had to do the whole overtime, which thankfully there was some, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was some good connections to Torrey Smith. That got us there, but it was not an easy win by any means.
Yeah, it was a 4-possession overtime. How often do you see that these days? I mean, that's very unusual. But a 4-possession overtime. The Chargers got the ball. They drove to midfield. Then they punted it down to the 11. The Ravens got the ball. They moved the ball out to the 48, and they punted it into the end zone. The Chargers got the ball. We're 3 and out. And then the Ravens had a long drive to get the ball to the San Diego 20 with 1:12 to go. The big connection being, as you mentioned, that 31-yard pass to Torrey Smith. But that's where they ended with Tucker having the field goal to finally put that game away. It you know, as dramatic as this play was, one of the things that strikes me about it is how it kind of got the Ravens over a little mini hump, but there's still a big hump left to go, both in the game and in the season too, as you know, kind of metaphorically right. or by analog. But you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't, they were then 9-2 and they had to, they still didn't, they didn't end up winning the division, right? They won the division, but they didn't get, they weren't able to secure that first round bye. So they were wild cards throughout the playoffs. Right. And which was, you know, it kind of became that, like, you know, it was always the mantra. You know, I've been a fan since the inception, growing up in Baltimore. I even remember those old fundraisers, Bring Baltimore the Ball. I don't know if you remember those, Ken.
Sure. But,
I went to those. My dad was a family friend of Joe Ehrman from the old Colts. And so we would go some of those things. And it was
Joe Ehrman, really nice guy, by the way. He always would show up at the Unitas events, and he became a pastor, or I think a pastor is the correct term, after he retired. Yes. And he would always do, you know, prayers at the beginning of that and whatnot. We always appreciated meeting him.
Yeah. Really great guy. Great family. My brothers and sisters, we were all friends growing up. So it was cool. I mean, it was just one of those things where the team was known for playing tough, never being the favorites. You know, something that, you know, changed a little bit with the last few years in 2019 to 2020. But, you know, we never had that. It was always just the way we had to fight to win everything. And that's what I've always appreciated about this team, is that even if it was difficult, they would keep going.
I appreciate that too. And this is the team that I always use when I say I want my team being a contender every year and making the playoffs, because there's two things about it. One is they were by far the worst of the first five Harbaugh teams. And it's really not close, folks. I mean, they just were not that good. They had a lot of holes. The offensive line was not nearly as good as it was in 08 and 09 when Gaither was on the left side. And you know, they had Michael Orr on the season at left tackle, which was pretty much a disaster. And then he got replaced in the playoffs. They made a big three-man switcheroo, and they got set for their playoff run. But they lost four of their last five games to stumble into the playoffs. And you don't remember? Yeah. Well, let's have a little discussion. They went to Pittsburgh. they had a game they lost to Pittsburgh at home, 23-20. Then, so, okay, no big deal. I don't even remember if Roethlisberger was playing that game. That might have been Charlie Batch or somebody. But in any case, they lost that game. Then they went to the Redskins. I remember that game a lot because it's one of the only times I've gone to a game and not been able to get a ticket, stopped by some police outside who thought they were doing just a marvelous job to try and prevent me from buying a ticket on the street. You know, it's like there's nothing better for them to do with their time. And we had to actually go home and watch the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And it's almost like an analogy for the play that we're talking about, is that it wasn't a straight shot of 29 yards. I mean, Ray Rice probably ran, if they did next gen stats today, they'd say he probably ran twice as many yards or something to get to that that first down marker. And what a testament to this team that would just, no matter what the odds were, they would just keep pushing. You know, Ray Lewis would give those amazing speeches about, you know, we're a miracle team, and this is meant to be, you know, whatever your beliefs are, it must be fun to have a guy like that in your locker room that just gets you inspired no matter what the odds are. I certainly appreciate that in business and in my personal life, right?
Yeah, well, it was certainly great having Ray the player on the field, in no doubt. I want to finish up with the season, though. They lost this game to the Redskins, and that was the RG3 rookie season. And Haloti Ngata injured him. The game went to overtime, and that was really the end of RG3's productiveness as a quarterback. He was never the same after that hit. But then the next week, they came home, had a ton of people injured for the game against Denver, and they got thumped 34-17. It wasn't anywhere near that close, folks. They got really destroyed in that game. And that was part of the problem, is that, you know, nobody thought they would be able to go into Denver and win in the playoffs, which looked like they were going to have to do at that point. But they came back the next week and they won the game they really needed to have against the New York Giants, 33-14, to secure the season or secure the division. And then they kind of took a week off against the Bengals in the final week, rested a lot of players and lost that game at Cincinnati. But they lost four of their last five going into the playoffs. And still, that immediately was the trigger to get Ray Lewis back, To have Flacco go on a remarkable streak and put together is, you know, something you remember as probably now being a very great football team. But I'll tell you, it was definitely not the best team of those early Harbaugh teams. In fact, it was the worst.
Right. Yeah. It really was a miracle season. I mean, obviously they faced Denver again in the postseason. Mm-hmm. They have the miracle mile, which I'm sure that's a play that someone wants to talk about in this series. But it was just to lose 4-5. You always hear that moniker of like, well, it doesn't matter how you start the season, it's how you finish the season. And this was, that did not follow that at whatsoever. And pretty amazing that they were able to just get enough and that they needed to be competitive. And ultimately, yeah, like you said, one of the greatest runs in postseason history, really ever. And we you could argue that, did we ever see that type of run from this team up until, you know, we kind of switched eras, right? Like we never saw Flacco be able to put that type of games together in that long of a stretch, even though he had plenty of talent. Yeah.
He was, other than 2014, he was pretty darn bad for the rest of his career, honestly. Well, John, really appreciate you joining us and talking about this play. A great play to remember. And for those who've missed it maybe at the time, go back and look on YouTube. See if you can find it. I imagine it's there. If it's not, it's on NFL Plus or NFL Game Pass or whatever service you're using, depending on where you live in the world. But lots of ways to still get a look at that play and enjoy some of what John and I have in terms of visual memories. And it sounds like you watched it again last night, right?
I did. I reviewed it again over the weekend. And it's on YouTube, the play. I highly recommend checking it out there. And if you're going to watch the game, skip to the fourth quarter. That's when it starts to get interesting.
All right, John. We appreciate having you on. Once again, he's at Mace Dog, MACEDAWG20 on Twitter. Catch him there. You can also catch him on Reddit. Same handle there.
A little bit different handle, but it's a dad bod on there. So you'll find me on commenting and just having fun talking about Ravens.
Very good. Exactly what you're looking for in this show. Just what's your perspective on one of the big plays in Ravens history? So if you'd like to be on that one play, I put out a few suggestions today on Twitter of plays that are not yet taken. Unbelievably, none of Ed Reed's interception returns have been taken. It is a shocker. Ray Lewis's interception, his first NFL game, is not taken. Whole bunch of others are not either. Todd Heap for the winning touchdown against San Diego in 2006. But just think about those iconic moments if you can. And if you need help, I'll help you with a spot if you'd just like to be on. But like to meet as many people as possible during this process. John, appreciate meeting you. And thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much, Ken. Really appreciate your time.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.